This is the MagicWordPodcast.com.
Happy New Year. This is Scott Wells for the MagicWordPodcast.com. Well, this podcast is being posted just a few days before the new year, but I thought it's not too early in order to wish you a very healthy and prosperous and joyful and peaceful new year. I hope that this next year of 2019 brings you a lot of shows and also that you continue to listen to this podcast and get inspired so this way that you can go out and become better magicians and better performers than yourself. This podcast is brought to you by our friends over at theperfecttrick.com, Mr. Eric Citron, who is the owner and operator of The Perfect Trick and the one who has taken care of many people who have gone over and checked out his website and purchased things through the store. He's got thousands and thousands of items, and you can always remember to save about 10%, well, exactly 10% on any of your purchases just by putting in the promo code WORD, that's W-O-R-D, at checkout, and that way that you can save 10%. Great deal. It's because he is a person who's been sponsoring us for a while, and I want to thank Eric and also you for going and helping to support him, because without you going and supporting him, then he won't support us. So it's kind of a symbiotic relationship. So thank you guys very much for going and supporting him and buying some of your online products and magic from theperfecttrick.com. Well, this week I am going to continue with some of my conversations that I had at Havana, Cuba, when I was at Magic Cuba, and this one is with Michael Goodell, and it's somebody who I've been wanting to talk with for a long time, and I'm glad I had an opportunity to sit down with him. There were a lot of things kind of going on. We were sitting out front, or actually out back of the Hotel Nacional, with the Caribbean back in the background over there, but there were also a lot of people who were around there as well. It's really not going to be much of a bother because we had good microphones we were using, but I will say that, Mac King was there, John Archer, a lot of people were kind of in the background there as well, and at one point where he talks about what's Mac doing, is he taking down his pants or something, that kind of is a callback to when I was chatting with Michael in the bus out in one of the daily updates from Magic Cuba, and as I was talking with Michael, I was sitting across from him on the bus seat, and apparently the Mac was trying to distract him and make him crack up during our conversation you'd just have to go back and listen. But anyhow, so we continue, and it was kind of interesting about the history that Michael gives about him working with Lance Burton and Lance coming into Las Vegas and associating them with Michael and having him help with part of the show, and how he'd move from one hotel to the other all the way until he finally decided, okay, this is enough and I'm going to retire. And so that was interesting. And then how that Michael had first met Penn and Teller when he was juggling with them actually on the street back in San Francisco years ago, and then their friendship continued over the years, and it grew, and he is now then a co-host and works with Penn Jillette on Penn's Sunday School podcast. So there are a lot more things he talks about. In particular, towards the end, he gives a lot of really great advice as he kind of recaps his lecture that he had given us at Magic Cuba, talking about how to write comedy, and I think this scripting advice that he gives is gold. This is something that is worth listening to and maybe taking some notes and remembering. It is really, really good. So that's kind of a quick recap of what you're going to be expecting to hear here this week. One other thing I want to explain, and that is the title of this week's podcast, which is Everything Falls. I named it that because, well, of course, Michael Goodell is a juggler, and it's not that he drops things, but that's the whole point of juggling. Everything that goes up must come down, and so everything does fall. But then, as he says in this podcast, it's something that you're going to have to learn from just to keep going back. And I think that's kind of, a subtle thing and a subliminal type of message that juggling teaches you, that when something comes down, throw it up again, just keep trying and trying. And so anyhow, that's kind of the point of what I was thinking whenever I had named this episode, Everything Falls. I hope that makes sense now. And so I'm going to step out of the way so this way that you can hear it in its entirety. So please welcome my guest, Mr. Michael Goodell, here on The Magic Word.
Hello
This is Scott Wells for the Magic Word Podcast.com, and we are in Havana, Cuba. And
we are.
This has been a fantastic time. And although we're here for Magic Cuba, there are a lot of people here that I've been wanting to talk to for a long time to have a more lengthy conversation. And one of them is a person who had worked with Lance Burton for 26 years.
20 years.
Performing. He's been working now with Mac for a while then, too. And is also into podcasts than himself. In fact, works with Penn Jillette for Penn Sunday School. Please welcome Michael Godeau. Hey there, Michael.
Thank you, Scott. Appreciate it, sir.
Glad that you're here.
And, me too.
So you've been excited about coming. When they called,
Finished the sentence, yeah.
Yes.
You want to go to Havana because we're, yes! Just shouted over the phone. Said,
yeah.
I'm so happy to get the opportunity.
It is beautiful here. Yeah,
it is unbelievable.
I don't know that we're going to be coming back here. You know, it's kind of like a bucket list thing, you know.
Yeah, exactly right. And it was amazing because I've been to many Caribbean islands. I worked cruise ships.
Of course.
Used to a lot and you know, fell in love with the Caribbean. Came down on my own and spent 2 months in Grenada. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Really been down here a lot, but this is the first trip to Cuba, and it is entirely different than all the other Caribbean islands.
It is different.
It is, because of the architecture. I mean, this place is unbelievable. The buildings are amazing.
Mm-hmm. And some of them have been destroyed. Look like they've been hit by cannon fire.
It's
of course,
amazing,
the hurricane has ravaged this island for
you drive many. Down the block, and there is, you know, the most beautiful house you've ever seen, and next to that is a pile of rubble.
Right.
And then, you know, three piles of rubble down is another of the most beautiful house you've ever seen.
Correct.
And everywhere you go, oh, my gosh, if you were to take that room, that could be the greatest apartment in the world. Look at, you know, everywhere you go is amazing.
A lot of Spanish architecture, obviously.
Spanish architecture. Yeah. Mm-hmm. All, you know, made out of the local limestone or coral, and they're just beautiful.
And the food has
been
phenomenal.
Been great.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, one of the things, of course, they don't have beef, and so I wouldn't be ordering a lot of hamburgers, so it's one of those things I think they have to import. Pork is popular here. Pork and obviously seafood.
We've been having lobster every night. And in fact, one of the big fusses about me coming was that I wanted to... Mac is behind you again. Now,
no.
I wanted to...
he's not going
to
pull off his pants, is he?
I don't know. I juggle apples as part of my show.
Oh, yeah.
And, they said, what do you, you know, a year ago they sent a list, what kind of things do you need? You said, you know, I need a lavalier microphone.
Mm-hmm.
I need three apples and a couple of carrots. And, you know, 2 weeks ago I got an email from them going, I don't think we can get apples or carrots, which is an amazing thing to think about.
They don't have fruit.
They have fruit. They
pineapple
have in-season fruits that grow here. So you can't get mangoes today.
Right.
But in mango season, you can get the best mangoes in the world.
Mm-hmm.
So there were no apples. They had a staff trying to find apples.
And they finally did. Because you just had to do the two shows. You were in the circus.
I'm going to confess here. I smuggled apples into the country. Hopefully I'm well home before anyone hears this.
Yes,
I smuggled in six apples. In a direct defiance of the government, I gave the stagehand three apples after the show.
And they were very thankful.
Oh, boy, excited.
Yeah. Well, I had remembered hearing a story years ago about Johnny Thompson smuggling his doves in. He was
wearing
the harness when he would go on board the planes.
I've been next to Johnny on some of those adventures. I've had the good fortune to work and travel with Johnny a bit, and it's...
Well, in traveling,
delightful.
One of the things that
they're hiding dogs in those dove harnesses to get them onto planes.
Oh, is that right too?
Yeah. Before the service animal thing, they traveled with their chihuahuas under, you know, stuffed under their coats in harnesses. It's pretty great.
Well, I was wondering about traveling, not just here, but then on cruise ships. Well, on cruises is one thing, you know, because that we can pack illusions and whatnot, and they'll ship down there. But I'm thinking, you know, getting over here with those large bean bags.
You know, I have exactly 100 pounds of stuff. I have two bags that are 50 pounds each, and I can travel anywhere in the world with them, and I can roll them myself. And I've, you know, dragged them onto trains in Europe and pretty poor.
And then you stuff them once you get there.
Yeah.
Okay. I mean, they're just deflated bean bags, basically. Okay.
Yeah. And you can buy peanuts most places, styrofoam peanuts.
Right. Mm-hmm.
But then I leave bags of peanuts in the hotel for the maids there.
Yeah, here you go. Here's a little souvenir. Yeah. I can sign the soup.
I know you wanted three trash bags full of bean bag peanuts.
Yeah, I take them down to their mail room. I'm sure they could probably use them or something at those places. Have you had problems? You say most places. Have you actually had a problem where you've not been able to find
I have. You know what? I have some, actually, I'm going to confess I have a couple of solutions for it, and I went through a million to try to solve this issue. I tried stuffing crumpled up newspapers in it. I tried balloons. At one point, I put 68-inch inflatable beach balls in each one, so that, and that works pretty good, other than blowing up 180 beach balls before
you got
the
a
show.
Headache. Yeah. You are dizzy, got vertigo.
And so now it's actually the cheat is I have a 6-foot beach ball inside of a beanbag chair skin, and I fill it up a third of the way, and it sits and looks exactly like a beanbag chair. Now I can fit a unicycle and three beanbags into one golf bag. So
that's what, a 6-foot unicycle you've got?
Yeah.
And that comes apart in three pieces?
Yeah, two pieces. And in fact, I have a...
Like hinged
No, it's just unscrews.
Okay.
But I have a 19-year-old autistic son who whenever he comes to the show and I say I'm now going to ride this 6-foot unicycle, after the show he'll walk around to people and tell them that unicycle's only 5'9". He's a compulsion to tell the truth, and will actually stop people and say he was lying about the unicycle. Yeah. It's 5'9".
Thank you, son, but can you hold back just a
shut
little
up.
Bit?
Shut up!
So what was that like in working for 20 years? You know, that first
I
of all...
I had the greatest job in the world.
I would think so, you know, that it would be great because you're just kind of the variety. You come and do just a little bit, and the rest of them got to carry the bulk of the show, you know.
I mean, and you know, I lucked out. I went into the Follies Brugere.
Yeah. And who were you working with
in 1983 with... my agent booked that.
No. I mean, who was working with the...
Well, the thing, 1983. We'll start earlier than that. 1982. I'm watching The Tonight Show. An unheard of Lance... You know, no one knew Lance Burton came on and did this dove act.
Mm-hmm. After and
I videotaped it. Just by... Because it was The Tonight Show and we always had video.
Right, of course,
you know, because you wanted any variety act.
Any... Yeah, magic.
And so, you know, we were like, oh, good Lord, look at this. Yeah. What is this? What a... You know, and in fact, ran the tape frame by frame going, I don't have any idea how he's doing any of these, and really went through it frame by frame trying to catch him and couldn't.
Right.
And then...
Were you thinking about being a dove magician?
Just...
You just want to know the secret.
Just fascinated
by
it. Just, you know, interested in it. Just, you know...
And you didn't know Lance from
I didn't know Lance at all.
Beans,
didn't know
anybody,
Lance at all.
And you lived in Vegas at the time?
No, I was in Houston, Texas. Working
my
at
hometown.
Astro World. Working at Astro World.
Sure, I remember that. That closed a long time ago.
I did Astro World for 3 years.
Juggling.
Yeah, juggling.
Okay, because you were really a Ringling Brothers clown.
I was a Ringling clown and went from Ringling to a circus in Mexico and then...
Okay, we'll get to that in a minute, too.
Yeah, it's a long, confusing...
We got an hour.
Watch the videotape.
So you saw Lance, right.
Yes, I saw the videotape Lance. And then the agent asked us if we wanted to audition for the Follies Brugere or Sugar Babies. And we said we would like to be in Follies Brugere in Vegas. It's a sit-down show. And we went and auditioned and got the gig. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, in 1983, we started in the Follies, and Lance was there.
Yeah.
And we're like, there's that guy.
There's that guy.
And at that time, Lance was so quiet.
And he's working at Tropicana.
He's working at the Tropicana, doing his dove act, doing, you know, the amazing dove act. And so... We'd stand in the wings and try to catch him.
Okay.
Just exactly like the video.
Yeah.
We stood on this time. We have a better advantage. We're in the wings. We're live. We're going to catch him.
Yeah.
Nope. Still couldn't catch him.
Yeah.
But became friends with Lance, you know, also met my wife in that show. So you know, met Lance.
Was she performing
and my
in
wife.
The show
my
then too?
Yeah, she was the lead singer in the Follies.
Awesome.
And so yeah, that was a good gig.
I guess so.
Hi, they
all
paid
way around.
Me, and I met a guy who's going to be one of my best friends ever,
and
my wife.
Yeah.
So it's turned out okay. That's gone well. And you know, we just became friends and hung out with Lance and talked with Lance and for the next, you know, seven, eight years, just talked about what we could do if we had our own show.
Because at that time, he was still just doing his
12-minute
dove act.
He was doing his 12-minute dove act. And then, you know, he decided, well, I want to have a show. And started working on Illusions and built that sword fighting.
Yes.
The amazing sword fight tables.
Well, he'd come to the Magic Island here in Houston to work on that for a while, even the Magic Island.
Yeah, I was in Magic Island in Houston back at that time. You know, I went and hung out with Lance there. And
that may have been when
Johnny
I met you
and Becky
back when.
Blaney. Yeah. And, you know, really funny Johnny Becky Blaney story from the Magic Island.
Something you could
share? We should never get to. Well, yeah. Well, possibly.
Okay. Because we're reopening, you know. So.
I know. That's great. Congratulations. That's very exciting.
It is.
You know, Houston has the best restaurants in the world.
So I think I'm, so. Good variety.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, let me say, in my opinion, it's third. I think first, in my opinion, would be New Orleans.
Yeah, possibly.
I love Creole cooking. And then I think St. Louis has a nice variety with German, Italian, and right. other. It's very good.
Well, but Houston had great Asian food when I was there. Great
correct.
Chinese food, great Japanese.
Yep, and of course
and the
seafood.
Good Cajun
and good
seafood.
Cajun, yep. And, yeah, Thai, and they've got, you know, good curry restaurants.
Yeah, I love
you know,
it.
Indian food.
Loved
and
being in Houston.
Yep. So, you were then
so,
talking
yeah, so
about
talked
doing
about,
the show.
We talked about, you know, what would you do if you had your own show. And Lance was talking to different producers, trying to find a producer for the show that could sell it. And what he discovered was that they would all say they would and then do nothing.
Right.
And then one night...
Because Magic wasn't playing back there. Zygmunt Roy, I think, were the only ones in town, basically.
Yeah, it wasn't basically. A big deal. Wasn't, yeah, right. It wasn't that much going on. And
that year would have been about 80... What? 87, 8?
Yeah. We opened the show, I believe it was 1991.
Okay.
So,
but for years they were talking, nothing happening.
You know, Lance was pulling out of the parking lot at the Tropicana, and you could see the Hacienda, you know, a block away. We could see their sign. And he pulled out one night and went, you know, the show there's not anything special at this point. Maybe I can sell them on doing his own show.
One-man show.
He went
Magic
in,
show, yeah.
Yeah, he went in and talked to them, and they went, yeah, sure, why not? Great. We'd love to have you. Let's do it.
Just like that.
Just like that. And so,
and he was wondering, why did I come here first?
Uh-oh. Uh-oh.
Yeah.
And so, you know, Lance signed a 12-week contract with the Hacienda Hotel. And, you know, we went over there. And
now, back then, they were not four-walling. I mean, that was something that the
hotel...
No,
that was... They were, yeah.
That's where David Sacks had come in and kind of...
Yeah. Exactly.
Changed things.
You know, they said, yeah, we'll hire you for 12 weeks. But they, one of the really funny moments was Lance said, the hotel needs to talk to you. You need to go in and meet with some of the executives. I said, okay, I'll go in and meet with them. And I walked in, and they said, you know, the reason they wanted to meet with me was that they said, we are not going to buy a microphone for you because all of those rotten acts that come in steal the microphones and you're only going to be here for 12 weeks and forget it. We are not buying you got to buy your own microphone if you want to work in our hotel.
Wow.
You
okay.
loser. You know what I mean? It's
basically,
you are what is wrong with you guys are thieves. We're not buying them. We wouldn't even buy a microphone for you. So I had to go buy my own microphone. You know, 8 years later, we moved out and
so was what,
took
radio?
The entire sound system with us because they were blowing up the hotel.
Well, Radio Shack mics will do that. You know?
Yeah. Well, but you know, they thought we were not going to be able to pull it off or do 12 weeks. And
but they were promoting it again back.
Yeah, yeah.
Before the hotels and casinos were responsible for doing all the advertising and everything.
Yeah, but
like
this
that.
Guy was sure there was no way that
it wasn't going to work.
That loser Lance Burton and that stupid right. juggler would ever be a success.
Right.
And of course, we outlasted him and.
Now,
how
many different parts did you come back, like, two times? I mean, like, Lance would do something, and then kind of, well, he was resetting,
then
you would...
Yeah, I did basically 12 minutes in the middle of the show, but then it was also involved in a couple of the magic tricks. I would appear in something and talk and a few other spots like that to make
the
it
comedy
more
foil?
Show.
I mean,
every now and then, And, of course, if a microphone problem or something like that, I would come out and...
Right,
chat with Lance while we repaired that, which was some real fun.
I imagine that would be, since it was your microphone. It's kind of like...
Yeah, it's ours.
If we had a real microphone, you know, by you guys would supply, then it would have been so much better.
Well, like so I said, when they closed the hotel, we took the whole sound system with
right,
us.
Right, right. And then moved over...
That, with their blessing. Please take the sound system. We're going to blow the place up.
And then from going over to Monte Carlo, because I remember that picture
yeah.
on the front of Magic Magazine, you know, with the $100 million man, you know, this...
It was amazing because, you know, we went over and did up, you know, when they were building it and
right.
hard hat tours of the theater as it was under construction and stuff. And then I remember the first time we walked in when it was done. And I said to Lance, "We're in trouble." The Hacienda, no one had any expectations.
It's like going from a high school stadium to a Super Bowl all of a sudden, you know.
Filthy little, you know, tiny hotel with
right.
short ceilings and cigarette smoke and then we were moving into this big beautiful theater with 1200
right.
seats
and did you design yourself, or did you have like an architect?
Lance wanted it to resemble a West End theater from London.
Okay.
And so that's what they copied when they built it.
Okay. And so they work with an architect, I assume, over there, and he just kind of took pictures and said, this is kind of what I want to look like. And
that wasn't...
He was involved.
Thankfully, I wasn't involved in that process.
Okay. You just kind of showed
they
up.
He said, hey, we're moving over here. Look at this picture. Yeah. Here's what they're building.
Okay.
I said, wow, that's going to be great.
Yeah.
That was my involvement in that part.
How different was the show from one place to the other?
Very. The Hacienda was, there are rooms that are hot rooms that are easy to work, that are fantastic clubs.
They're more intimate.
So if you work the Magic Castle,
right,
or if you work the Hermosa Beach Comedy and Magic Club, it's going to be a great show.
Sure.
The size and shape, something about
very
the magic of the room, bam, it's a great success.
Right.
And the Hacienda was like that. The Hacienda was a really perfect size and shape, and the show went well and great. And the new theater was so big that it was much more difficult to work. We just had to... But it's a question of solving the tone of the room. You know, as a professional, if you do the show a bunch of times in that place, you'll go, well, that joke doesn't work here when I say it this way, so I'm going to try it this way. And so you experiment until you find the tone of the room, and we did.
That's a very
eventually.
Good point. Well, and of course, when you're doing it night after night, that you can.
Yeah. One of the great things, and people often say, you know, how did you do the same show every night all that time? Well, first off, we are not doing the same show because it's fun, and we're allowed to improvise, and we can play.
Mm-hmm.
But also, by having it in the same place and not having to worry about moving your props or where you're going to get your apples, you walk in focused on the art or comedy of the show.
Mm-hmm.
And so we didn't worry about moving the props somewhere else or setting up or, you know, what's going on with my hotel room.
Right.
You just did your show. And
it's like showing up to work.
Yeah. You know, and people... I think it's underrated. People don't seem to appreciate it. If you see a videotape of George Carl, it is a perfect, rock-solid, unbelievably funny 8 minutes.
Charlie Fry told me about that.
That's because he does the same show every night for his entire life.
Right.
And so you get perfect.
Mm-hmm.
You get a joke for every second.
Mr. Electric, for an example.
Yeah, exactly. It becomes a perfect show because you have the time to mold it. It becomes... You know, you think anytime you think of a new joke, it goes into that same 8 minutes. So the show gets no longer; it just gets denser and denser until it's like it's a solid, amazing thing.
You know your beats and you know your timing. That's a good analogy of that. I guess was again as we're talking here, we were at Magic Cuba and Mike Caveney had performed here, and he performed in Spanish. Now he doesn't speak Spanish, but he memorized his act in Spanish, and the reason is just as you said, Michael, that he knows that so well and all the beats that...
You know the timing. You know the feel of the timing.
Regardless of what you're...
So it's perfectly fine to... You know, you can do your show if you go quack, 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 and then time it right. You know
correct.
What I mean? And even though that, you know, that'll make ducks laugh because they understand it.
Right.
The rest of us all understand the timing.
Correct.
You know, and it's a fantastic thing to watch.
And so with the Monte Carlo, again, that was probably towards the end of the casino still paying for... All of that, wasn't that right?
I think it was. Again, I'm not involved in the financials on any of that. So,
but that lasted for about how many years? About 15 years or so? Or at the
14. We did 14 years.
Okay. What brought on the ending of that? I often wondered. I figured that Lance just kind of figured, you know, I'm kind of done. You know.
I think that dealing with the hotel became more of a burden than he wanted it to be.
Mm-hmm.
And they had requested him to do some things that he felt were... unethical to his employees.
Well, no, that's
and he said,
good that he takes
"I will not, do that."
Yeah, and they said, "Okay, thanks a lot. It's been fun."
No, I they said, "Well, we'll talk about it." And then he just called them and said, "You know, I don't want to talk about it. We're gonna pack up our stuff and go."
Now the relationship, of course, that Mac has had with Mac King has had then with Lance that made it easy. Of course, you're doing Mac for then forever as well. So. Was it kind of like when you just went across the street, so it was a fairly easy transition, or was there a period of time that that Mac had to think about putting you in as part of his show?
Oh, no, I'm not part of Mac's show in Vegas now.
Okay, I was thinking there might be like a variety that he
put you in. No, just every now and then you know, we've done it half a dozen times over the last 20 years. We've done shows together, and it's, you know, it's a blast. We've been very close friends for a long time. I have a daughter that's almost the same age as their daughter, and so in Vegas we spend a lot of time.
Yep.
We go play croquet at Mac's house, you know, a couple of times a month, and
Right.
It's a great social scene. It's great to live somewhere where there are people within your community.
Yes.
There are a lot of jugglers and magicians in Vegas, and we do get the chance to visit and do stuff together and hang out. And,
I was thinking about that for an example during
Magic. You know, my biggest rival, Michael Holly, and I have breakfast, you know, once or twice a month. You know, uh-huh. Just because everybody's friends.
In the same city, right, right. Yeah. You don't see each other as competitors, you know, even though there are hundreds of magicians who live
and
in
Vegas. You know, if I had a question on building a prop or a joke, I would call Michael Holly, and Michael Holly would go, well, here's my idea for that. You know what I mean?
It's
great. The person I go head-to-head against, we're great friends. You know, it's fantastic.
But I was thinking during Magic Live is usually in August when Fielding West has his birthday, and so,
yes.
You know, we go over to his house for his birthday, and I was just thinking about all the people around there, and I thought, oh, yeah, of course, there's Norm Nielsen and different people who are coming in.
Kind of an unemployed magician's lunch pretty often. Not quite every week, but, it'll be, Lance and Fielding and Norm and Lupe and Michael Holly and Tommy Lang, who was a stagehand in our show. And the bunch of that gang, we'll all meet it for food lunch somewhere. Yeah.
Carlton?
No.
Carlton was over. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
Carlton Company?
Yeah.
He was over at
But he's never...
He's not part of the lunch group.
He's just not part of our lunch group. Just because I've never hung out with him, so I don't really know
him. That reminds me. Years ago, there was a movie called Just You and Me, Kid, with Brooke Shields and George Burns. And I remember Carl Ballantyne and some others were there, and they were called...
Right.
They played poker, and it was the no-shirt poker gang or something, because they're all magicians. They couldn't wear shirts. They knew they weren't, putting cards over there.
Well, the Rat Pack. We decided to call ourselves the Snack Pack.
Well, it's good you're not calling yourself the Six Pack.
Yeah.
Well, that was years ago.
Yeah.
When that changed from a washboard, more to a wash tub.
No, we're too snacky for that. Yeah.
So then Penn & Teller came to town, and
they came to town, and they were starting. I was already. Friends with Penn and Teller,
Before they moved to Vegas.
They moved to Vegas. I had met them in San Francisco when they were doing a three-person show called the Asparagus Valley Cultural Society.
Wow, that does go back.
Yeah. Yeah, I was a street juggler in San Francisco at that time and came and saw their show. And, the funny moment for me was
that the Las Vegas stage? Or what was that called? There's a place there in Los Angeles where they performed.
No, this was before that. This was San Francisco.
I'm sorry,
Los Angeles.
Okay, yeah.
But yeah, I saw them in Los Angeles as well. But I went up to Penn after the show. I said, hi, I'm a juggler and doing street shows here, and just wanted to say how much I enjoyed the show. And he stopped and yelled over to Teller. They're always out there signing stuff. He said, Teller, this guy says he's a juggler. I don't believe him. He's not dressed like a hippie. So that was my first meeting with Penn and Teller.
Yeah.
But when they moved to Vegas, they were doing 12 weeks a year, I believe, at Bally's. And we became friends, and hung out during the time that they were in town.
Right.
And then when they got a residency and came to town full time, we hung out more. And then they got a TV show called The Sin City Spectacular, which was an old variety show like The Cher, Sonny and Cher, other acts would come on.
And they were just part of the variety act?
No, they were the feature. They were the hosts.
Hosts. Oh, I got you. Okay.
It was their show. It was their Penn & Teller Sin City Spectacular.
What year would that have been? About 90?
Something? Yeah.
Okay, yeah, about then. Yeah.
And they asked all of their friends, all the variety acts that they knew in Vegas, to come in for the first week to pitch ideas for bits.
Mm-hmm.
And they just hired everybody as a writer for a week, as a consultant.
To see how it'd work out.
Yeah, and everybody came in, and we all, spent... It was a blast. All the variety acts in, chatting and talking about bits and how to create stuff and how to build stuff and coming up with tricks for the show. And it was a great... I really enjoyed it. And at the end of the week, they said, okay, thank you guys for coming. And everybody went home except for me.
They said, you can stay?
No, they didn't say that. Just said...
I'm not leaving.
This is really fun.
Yeah.
I'm going to keep doing this with you guys if that's all right with you. They're like, we're not paying. You can hang around, but we're not paying you.
Okay.
You can just hang around and do this because this is
fun. You got nothing else to do.
Yeah, exactly. So I continued to go in every day.
Yeah.
And
go into work.
Write bits for them and work with them on stuff. And then during one of the early filmings, I helped them to create a trick, a cut and restored rock climbing rope for Super Dave Osborne.
Okay.
So Super Dave is climbing up this rock, and you know, Teller pulls it up, and Penn cuts the rope.
Okay.
And it looks like he's going to fall and die, and they let it go, and of course it didn't. And I helped rig it inside of an indoor climbing gym in Las Vegas. And so I set it up so that, you know, Super Dave was safe. So Penn and Teller were on top of the rock, cutting the rope and safe. And then on the rock wall behind them, we had dancers in the show called the Seven Deadly Sins. And we put the Seven Deadly Sin dancers on the rock wall behind them in their feathers.
Okay.
In their feathers and headgear and stuff like that. Yeah. And at the end of that day, they said, you know, that was a lot of work. We should probably pay you. And and they hired me for the rest of that run. Great. Yeah, thank you so much. And it was a blast. We did, I don't know if it's 24 or 26 episodes of this show, a one-hour show. Penn and Teller did a big trick each show, a new big trick each show. And we wrote gags for you know, Terry Garr and the Smothers Brothers and Slash. And, you know, Alice Cooper was on the show. It was a fantastic show.
Who was, you know, were you kind of a fanboy at the time? I mean,
And so, Lyle Lovett was on the show.
Who was your favorite to work with?
The Smothers Brothers. The Smothers Brothers. I just loved them.
Because Tommy Smothers is like magic, I understand.
Yeah, and they were coming on the show. And I was
Ray Blackstone
Jr. fan.
Had been a writer way back when on the show.
Yeah, a bunch of folks were. Yeah, and it was, they came on the show to do a bit, and I got to write some jokes specific to them and, you know, so solve some problems for the bits right then and there where I wrote it.
So right.
Here's what you're going to do, and they have fun, guys. You know, so the Smothers Brothers were, you know, asking me to, I got to sit and chat with the Smothers Brothers and help them write a joke that they did. I mean, just not only, you know, oh, I helped create this bit that you're going to do on the show, but then also I solved a specific question and problem on it that then, you know, Dickie's Mothers did with Teller, and it turned out to be really funny. And it just was great to be, you know, working with them and these longtime heroes and stuff. So,
well, do you work on Penn and Teller Fool Us currently as far as
I don't
Johnny
work on
and
Fool
Michael
Us
Close?
Because it's, I'm not enough of a magic specialist to be able to advise on anything like that.
Okay.
You know what I mean? So,
well, what was it like in the writer's room? I mean, typically, some people are kind of throwing out ideas as opposed to,
During Sin City, what we would do was we would go to like high tea at the Four Seasons or to Starbucks. And at that time, I wasn't, I was, you know, a consultant on the show. There was a head writer. And so really my job consists of sitting at high tea and having sandwiches and just trying to be funny for my friends and suggest things that they could do for
And someone's
show.
Writing this down?
And someone else is taking notes on it and writing it down.
Okay.
And at the end of the day, you go home and they go, wow, great job today. You guys did a lot of work. And you go, we had sandwiches.
It was just fun.
What do you mean we had good work? We had sandwiches. And so it was great. That was, you know, that was a fantastic
So it's really not a writer's room from the standpoint that you're jotting down ideas. There is just one
person. Most of the time, there's usually one person.
Okay.
And that person's job, at that time, Coleman DeKay's job was to go home and assemble all of those things into a cohesive script that they could use. And then when that came back in, we would all take passes at it to try to improve it.
And fine-tune that.
Yeah, fine-tune the stuff. Mm-hmm. But, you know, then, of course, ultimately it's the head writer's job to turn it in as a script and get it done.
Yeah,
and the rest is on taping day. One of my jobs, one of the best jobs, is to stand on set and say, "Oh, I know how we can fix this so it works."
Because you were on the creation of that.
Or also, but just solving
timing
issues. When we get there and you look at it on camera, you go, "Well, that's not working. We have to solve this. Let's find some way. How are we going to do this? You know, the prop broke. What are we going to do?" Solving all those kinds of problems is fun.
You know, I was talking to Pat Hazel many years ago when he'd moved from Omaha to California, and then eventually he was working then with Jerry Seinfeld.
Right.
And he said that his job was to fine-tune some of the things from the writers. And, his job was basically, you know, his commute was from his bedroom, the kitchen, to, you know, the office, the other room or whatever. But I said, that's got to be the greatest job in the world. He said, no, if you stop and think about it. Because if something's not working and they're out there actually performing, you know, doing it live before the audience, and it's just not hitting like that should, the timing and the laughter or whatever. And so Jerry would say, okay, you need to brush this up. I said, it's got to be great. And he said, no, because that I've got to be not only funnier than the funniest person in the room, but the combination of that, and also throw out the first three ideas, thinking that they probably already thought of those ideas. The things that I would think of that's pretty funny, it's like, nope, they've already done that, that, and that. So I've got to go beyond that, which makes it more difficult to be creative.
See, I will throw those three in just in case they didn't. They had, and then, yeah. But I'll just keep going.
Yeah, keep going.
Just try to keep going until I've done one that they like. So it, you right. know, I may do ones that they've thought of, but also I'm just, like I said, going to keep going until eventually somebody goes, okay, that's going to work.
Right, right. And that also has to do, I think,
but I enjoy that. I like that pressure and that problem solving. I thought that was great.
Right.
You know, when you do solve it, it feels fantastic when they do something and it gets a laugh.
Right.
And it was because you said, well, let's try this.
Uh-huh. So I was mentioning Penn and Teller. When you were working with Penn then also, that on his Sunday school,
yeah.
That's a couple times a week, and how has that developed when he came to you as far as...
Penn and I did a daily show, a daily radio show
mm-hmm.
on one of the radio networks for a couple of years.
Yeah.
We were just live on air for an hour every mm-hmm. day for 2 years, and then eventually moved into podcasting.
Okay.
Because
a local radio station there in
Vegas?
Nationwide.
Oh, okay. Nationwide. And it wasn't Penn Sunday School at that time. It was just the Penn Radio Hour, I think. And
he couldn't speak probably as open as he does on
right,
the podcast.
Yeah,
sure.
Exactly. But also, at the end of that time, we were... It's just too hard for Penn to take that much time out of his day. He travels
sense.
And works.
Right.
No one works harder than Penn and Teller. Mm-hmm. You know, we're here in Havana doing this, but they're in their office right now writing a new bit.
Really? Yeah, for their show.
Yeah. And yeah. they will put in 12 new bits in the next few weeks because they've got a new season of Fool Us, and they have to do a big trick for Fool Us
right.
every episode of their own. So they're trying to get that done.
When you're recording the podcast over there, then are you just kind of in and out and someone else edits it and puts it together?
Yes.
And
yeah, so we have a tech guy, Reddy Rich, who does it for
okay.
us. And we just meet... once a week.
You'll have guests lined up and they come
sometimes
in and
we'll
you just
guests
kind of
chat. Sometimes we'll just chat
mm-hmm.
and we'll we'll talk for 2 hours and they'll put that into two podcasts, a Sunday and a Wednesday mm-hmm. show.
Okay. So sometimes they are broken up in two or sometimes they
always
might
are.
Have...
They're,
oh, they are.
Usually,
okay.
Not always. I mean, sometimes we'll have a guest and we'll do one 45-minute spot with them and then let them go and start a new show.
Right.
But usually we'll record both. We'll stop in the middle and then start a new one, but it's one conversation generally.
Are the guests that he has I know they're not always magicians necessarily, how do they finding the right people to come
it
in
is,
as guests?
It is purely on who Penn wants to talk to.
I was going
to
say it's his
we
decision
do not,
much.
Yeah, we are not you can send us a recommendation and we will never take it.
You say thanks but no thanks, we don't need your ideas.
Yeah, and it's as wide ranging as you can imagine. We have mm-hmm. Nuclear scientists. We had a woman on who wrote a book on grammar recently who turned out to be fantastic. You know what I mean? We talk to scientists, we talk to writers, we talk to occasionally to comedians or to movie people, but most often it's musicians. Because Penn knows more about music and lyrics than anyone else on earth. If Penn wants to talk to you on our show, the interview that he'll do with that person is unbelievable. He's the best interviewer in the world
mm-hmm.
when it comes to the specifics of someone that he knows, because he will know, their childhood.
Yeah,
you know what
okay.
I mean? Yeah. We're not Larry King in this, where I want to make sure I don't know anything about you before we have it. We are the opposite. We know everything about you. And so the questions that Penn will ask them are mm-hmm. amazing.
So they're intimate questions sometimes.
Really intimate and amazing.
Yeah,
and
it goes pretty deep. I thought that about, Gilbert Gottfried's podcast.
Yeah, Gilbert's the same way. If Gilbert has you on, it's because he knows everything about you.
Right.
And he's obsessed with you and wants you on his show.
Yeah, it's colossal obsession.
We've had Gilbert on our, and he's unbelievably funny. There's no one funnier than Gilbert.
I think it would be a lot of fun.
He's really
and Gilbert
fun.
Together.
Yeah.
Coming
it's
on
really
there.
It's really fun. And I picked up Gilbert once with my son in the car. Again, my autistic son, who just loves Iago. He played the parrot on...
Oh, yes, of course.
Aladdin.
Mm-hmm.
And we could not get begged Gilbert to do the voice. He would refuse to do
he
it.
He wouldn't do it.
Wouldn't do it. Any other voice.
No, I'm not going to.
Let me do Groucho Marx for you. No.
Yeah, no.
He would do, Larry Fine from the Stooges. things are crazy stuff.
Yeah.
But
he does it on his own podcast.
Yeah, of course.
It reminds me whenever I saw Sammy Davis Jr. We're talking about people who were being in the moment, and performing all the time so many years ago in Las Vegas. And And there were people from the audience saying, you know, hey, do Bojangles. And he said, no, right. I just don't feel it tonight.
Right.
You know?
Yeah. It's,
and
yeah.
So it's, you know, sometimes you feel like, sometimes you don't. Yeah. You know, you had lectured during this event, too. So I want to kind of touch on this just a little bit. I thought that it's important that people who are listening to this get a little bit more detail about what you were talking about as far as comedy writing.
Right.
Fixing and breaking and all that kind
yeah,
of thing.
Yeah. It's probably tough to get it. I'm probably pretty short. The main thing to get across is laughter is the sound of assumptions breaking. Hmm? Ask yourself what people assume by what you say. If you say, I can do a pirouette, you know, you're standing on stage and you're juggling knives, say, now I will now do a pirouette. The expectation are that you're going to toss the knives and you're going to pirouette and keep juggling.
Right.
There's no reason in the hell you can't just set them down, pirouette, and pick them up and juggle them. Right. And that's just breaking the expectations.
Uh-huh.
And that's the simplest way to explain what comedy is. And it can't just be breaking the expectations. It has to be breaking the expectations within the framework that you've created. I could say, I'm going to do a pirouette. And if I don't do a pirouette, then there's no joke.
Right.
And so I still need the pirouette part. So there needs to be a connection between those two, but you just need to break the expectations of what you've said. Like I say, as a part of my show, I say I'm going to juggle while wearing this blindfold, and I put on a blindfold, and then I turn around and I pick up the knives off the floor so that clearly I can see it. So I've broken the expectations of a blindfold. And ask yourself about everything in your show. What do people think this means? What are the expectations on what I say? I'm going to do this trick. They have a series of expectations. They think that you're a professional. They think that you've practiced. They think that you're confident. And there are versions of all these. You know, when we talk about that, you can think of routines that are built on, okay, I know how to do this trick, and then, oh, turns out I don't. I have an instruction booklet.
Right.
Banana, bandana. The presumption is that you speak English well enough to know the difference between banana and bandana.
The difference, right.
You know what I mean? Those are they're very basic, broken assumptions. And that's the easiest, I think the most basic way to write. Because by asking yourself what your assumptions are, you can sit and write down a list. Mm-hmm. And when you can write a list of what the assumptions are, I move over one column to the right and I list the broken assumptions or opposites of those things that I listed that are the assumptions. And when you say some of them out loud, like I can't identify the difference between a banana and a bandana, you'll laugh. If it's a good bit, you'll laugh. Draw a circle around that.
Right.
And so I've listed the assumptions. I've listed the broken assumptions. I'll make another list that's fixes. How will I fix the fact that I don't know the difference between a banana and a bandana? In this situation, it's not really a fix, but I'm just going to accept it. The way I will accept the cognitive dissonance between banana and bandana is that I will just go with banana because I am on a stage and people are watching me.
Right.
And so that's, you know, the basic assumptions, opposites, fixes. I'm just going with the banana, and then I'll try to break it again. What are the opposites of it? How can I break that problem again? Well, the problem is that banana is making a big, huge, hairy mess.
Mm-hmm.
And so just fix the problem, break the problem. Fix the problem, break the problem is how I'll write. And I'll just make assumptions on each one and then break the assumptions and then more assumptions about those things and then break them. So it's paper intensive.
Right.
Gets to be a giant pyramid about one word from your bit.
It really gets to be a formula that
it's
you can
really
actually
a formula that you can sit down and write. And most people don't work this way. Most people work more intuitively than this.
Right.
But if I have to turn in something tomorrow, I'm going to sit down and write out a list because I'm going to come up with stuff that I wouldn't have thought of otherwise, and I'm going to have it now.
Which is what the guys do for the daily talk shows.
Right.
They've got to come up with today's news.
One fella told me what he does is he takes USA Today, and where they have a list of one line of news from each state, write a joke for each line.
That's a good creative process.
It's a really simple process for getting your mind tuned to this.
Start thinking.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think I've always thought that creativity is a muscle that can be exercised.
Yes.
I mean, people think, well, I'm just not creative. You can be if you start getting into that mode.
And the most important advice anyone gives anybody is to do as many shows as you can.
Sure, flight time.
Go out and do street shows.
Yeah, anything that you can and accept that. Because a lot of people say, well, I'm not going to do a charity show because they're not paying me anything.
Right.
Well, depending upon where you are in your career, you might need to take that.
If
you know,
you've done 40,000 shows, you can skip that one. But
right.
Otherwise, do as many as you can.
Yeah, if you don't know what you, exactly. But I was just thinking about the we talked yesterday about the Tim Conway piece where he was in the doctor scene, which he's or dentist, I think, and he was injecting somebody accidentally. And there hey, there's John Archer. Yeah.
The very famous John Archer right. has just walked out onto the patio here after having the toughest show any of us have ever seen last night.
And he's, that was amazing. Still doing such a great
Facebook
job.
On Facebook this morning, he said, I don't know what happened. I had the worst show I've ever done, and I got a standing ovation.
That's right.
He's our hero this morning. He's a champion here. He did a show last night at a
disco
in Havana with people who wanted to be dancing and did not speak English.
A midnight
there
show.
Were, you know,
a
there
lot
were,
of drinking, a lot of flashing lights.
There were
lights.
50 magicians there, but there were also 200 people who wanted to be dancing with their beautiful Cuban women.
Yeah, right. Not watching
and, and not speaking English well enough
right.
to understand what this lunatic is
and
talking
you get someone
about.
Who's not only speaking English, but he actually has an English accent,
yeah,
English. Which even
and,
exacerbates
and,
it.
And a very verbal comedy act.
Sure.
Not as visual
and
as
standing
some of the
ovation
others.
From it. Yeah,
yeah but people talked through it, and he struggled and made a million hysterical jokes about how difficult it was to do it. He's a hero
a real
this
pro.
Morning, a national hero this morning.
So I was saying that Tim Conway in the dentist routine that he was supposed to be giving some Novocaine or something,
right.
and he injected himself accidentally. And so,
right.
you know, again,
so
the
assumptions are you know that your dentist knows what he's doing.
Right.
He's a professional. He's done this before. When you start breaking those assumptions, you can see where the comedy comes from. That's exactly how you write a...
And he tries to fix it, and
right.
then he injects
he
himself
it,
in the other
himself.
Hand or something,
yeah,
and his hands don't work, and one thing or
exactly.
another.
Exactly, yeah. How do we solve it? Well, I'll do the injection with the other hand.
Yeah.
Dang it, it's broken again. I did it myself again.
Right. Yeah, and one thing happens after another. So that makes sense, certainly. Now, those are things that you can do then yourself and just looking at your act. And that's the thing is that is I've heard many people say before, the difference between an amateur and a professional is an amateur is what you're doing. Different... tricks for the same audience and the professionals doing the same show for different audiences. And so by doing it, it's the same show for different audiences, it gets tighter and tighter, just as you were saying, and so that you could do it, like again with Michael Caveney, that he can memorize that
in Spanish. Show in
Spanish. Exactly.
Yeah,
it's like doing it almost blindfolded
and
still being a trooper and going all the way through it. So it just has to do with flight time and getting those opportunities. But once you have that, I know that the Bob Fitch workshop, that people will spend a lot of money to go, and I remember talking to Gene Anderson saying that he had spent a lot, and I think that the one thing he learned was where when he was picking up a prop, he didn't have to turn or walk across the stage. He could sit and pick something up or whatever it was. It was a very minor thing,
right.
but he said it was well worth it just for that one thing because it just made everything
right.
you know flow so much
right.
better.
There's a moment in your career when you've done enough shows that you just you say, well, it's, you know, I don't care if the sound doesn't work or if that table falls
right.
over. It's a show.
Correct.
I've done 40,000 of these.
It's not
going to be fine.
Yeah.
You know, you can leave your props on stage, and I will do a show around them. I'll pick them up and move them if they have to, and I will just talk while I do it. And nobody cares. Nobody cares. There, it. If you're confident about it, it's going to be fine.
That
they're worried about you, and if you can cause them to relax, if you can allow them to relax, there's no other problems. I saw there's an old. Concert film from the Talking Heads called Stop Making Sense.
Yeah.
And when I saw that the first time, for me it was a liberating moment. David Byrne, I felt, did that music show as if he were in his living room by himself. There were no self-conscious feelings. I didn't feel like he was trying to impress me.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't feel like he was trying to do a show for me. I felt he was doing a show for himself. And that was very relaxing and very calming and for me liberating and
right.
and made it so that I tried to make my show that so that there's no worry.
That's a good point. You can get derive your inspiration from so many things, you know, from film or wherever it might be, not just watching another person's
and
show.
For me, comics are always inspirations. You know, I try to talk like Paula Poundstone or
mm-hmm.
like Jake Johansson or move like Emo Phillips
mm-hmm.
or, you know what I mean? Those.
Sure.
And you can essentially do an impersonation of them because I can't do a good enough impersonation of Paula Poundstone that you would say, well, that's Paula Poundstone.
Right.
I suck at impersonations.
Yes.
But I can feel myself that flavor of Paula Poundstone. That
you
I
try to
that.
Channel it in your mind.
Channel it,
okay.
exactly.
Mm-hmm.
Or, you know, Jim Carrey, whoever you
right.
like.
Right. You, well, You said struck on something there a moment ago. I think it's important that some of the listeners will hopefully learn from, and that is that.
Well, I didn't mean to teach anything. Let's stop that now.
If someone is discouraged by something going wrong, they shouldn't give it up and go back to something else. And I'm saying that because I recall so many years ago, I was teaching some people magic, and we had a magic show, and it was in a public forum, and this guy dropped a thumb tip.
Right.
And he stopped in the middle of the show, and he said, "I guess you know how that was done." And he finished right there. He picked it up and walked off. I mean, it was a close-up show. He's doing like at a restaurant or something. And not only walk off, he quit magic. I mean, he was done.
Right.
He was so embarrassed.
Some people, that's a blow. Yeah.
Yeah. And I said, you just pick it up in your pocket. What's this?
The next advice I give is entirely useless. Start doing shows as young as you can so that your ego is not involved in it, so that your ego is bomb-proof. I did shows, you know, street shows at 16 years old that were absolutely horrible, and I still thought I was doing great. And I feel that every time I look at a video from 3 years ago, I think, oh, my God, that was horrible.
Yeah.
What was wrong with me? Good thing I'm doing it right now.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just not thinking. 3 years from now, I'm going to hate what I'm doing right now. You know what I mean? That's a natural advancement. What? Try to do it when you have no, you know, once you've learned what art is, once you've learned what a good show looks like, it's hard for you to do a good show because, you know, you want to do what Mike Caveney did. You want to be able to do what John Archer did last night.
Right.
But if you say, I'm going to be like that today, it's not going to happen. You're going to be bitterly disappointed because very few of us are John Archer today. You know, I wouldn't have been able to do what John Archer did last night. I wouldn't have
just gotten
my
discouraged.
Friends would
thanks.
Not. I wouldn't have been discouraged. I would have done the show,
sure,
and gotten laughs and had fun. But it would not have been with the self awareness that John Archer presented of just how horrible this is and how funny that is at the same time.
Ossie Wynn had said something profound during a lecture he did here.
Probably dinner last night.
After a few martinis. A few mojitos. It was about that I'm not trying to be the best magician. I'm trying to be a better magician.
Well, just be the one you are.
Yeah, but by being better, you are always looking to excel and be better. Just like you said that if you're the best, it's like I don't need to work anymore because I've
it. Right.
But if you keep trying to tighten that up.
No one who's good falls for that. You
Correct.
Know what I mean?
Correct.
There are no good people. There are, you know, we meet some illusionists occasionally who fall into that trap, but I think they're
good
young
point.
And have
yes.
wealthy parents.
I think we know who we're talking about.
There's the greatest people in the world, Lance Mack. They all know that they're working all the time, and they're all trying to get better. It's part of their gig.
That's right. Well,
it's a race. I got to try to be better than that guy.
It's a marathon.
I'm doing a show, you know, with Matt King. If I don't step up the game some, it's going to be...
They're going to say, who is that guy?
Yeah,
they're
exactly.
going to remember you, but not in a good way.
Exactly. And then Mac brought this shoe on, this stupid shoe in the middle of the show, and it did 10 minutes. And it's hard not to be that, you know what I mean?
Yeah, that shoe.
Strike not to be that shoe.
So that's your advice.
Don't be that shoe. Yeah. I got to get going. We're going on a tour here in Cuba.
You are getting ready.
My family's waving. And
all right. Well, then we're going to wrap up, and I want to thank you very much for your time. But as we do leave, the name of my podcast is called The Magic Word Podcast. So my question is, what would be your magic word? What is your philosophy of life? Doesn't have to be a word. I mean, I'm talking about abracadabra.
Oh, well, you know, the one that I think is most important is Groundhog Day.
Okay.
The movie Groundhog
yep.
Day.
Yes.
Because what Bill Murray learns in that is what you have to learn to do a good variety act. You're going to do the same day over and over again as a variety act. When you quit committing suicide over that and try to make it the best day possible, your show gets better every day.
Great advice. Good. Michael, thank you very much.
Thanks,
appreciate the time.
Appreciate it.
So for the Magic Word Podcast,
thanks,
I'm Michael Godot. This is Scotty L.
Be forgot and never brought.
Wow, that was great. Thank you very much, Michael, for being my guest. And I know that you were being pulled in different directions there. And you had some people waiting for you to go out and do some other sightseeing around Havana. Our time in Cuba, ladies and gentlemen, was although we were there for several days, they were pretty much full every day with all kinds of activities of going one place or another. We were going on the bus to one scenic tour or another, or to dinner or to lunch or to a show or something. And in the mornings with the different lectures and everything we had, it was a pretty full day. And then if you were trying to get away to do anything with your spouse or friends, then that kind of, you know, filled in all the hours in between. And so I know that Michael's wife and Mac and his wife and others were trying to get going, and I was kind of delaying things. So thank you very much, Michael, and thanks also to the rest of the people for waiting and letting me finish the conversation with Michael. I think that you, the listeners, are going to benefit from a lot of the great stuff that he shared with us here today. So again, thank you, Michael and friends, for your time that you had given us, and I know this has really been great. And I also want to thank theperfecttrick.com for being our sponsor, and remind everybody to go and check that out if you're going to be buying anything into this new year of 2019. It might be a good time to make a resolution to maybe try a different magic dealer, online dealer. If you're going to be buying something online, go check them out. And there are a lot of things that they are looking for. If you have some used, gently used magic that you'd like to turn into cash, I know that theperfecttrick.com would like to talk with you and see if there's something perhaps they can give you some cash for that, particularly if you have some collectible items like from the Magic Wagon or from Tenyo. I know that Eric Citron is looking for that kind of stuff because he has some buyers that also. Well, also, I want to thank you, the listener, for this past year of listening to the Magic Word and keeping us on your podcast list of others. I know there are, gosh, you know, I just had heard the other day there are 550,000 podcasts out there with over 18.5 million episodes. Well, we're just one of them, and among those half million, we are rapidly approaching number 500. And so I wouldn't be doing that if it wasn't for all of you and for the sponsorship that we have, like from theperfecttrick.com and from the patrons who are the friends of the Magic Word, because it's really because of the patrons that keep this thing going. I know that you guys have a lot of things here at the end of the year, which that you're looking to perhaps make a donation to one thing or another. This is not a charitable organization. You're not going to be getting a tax write-off, but if you have anything that you can share with us, that would be greatly appreciated, and you can do that through patreon.com, or you can also give a one-time donation or a pledge if you wish through PayPal. There are various ways of doing that, and that's all explained over there on our website at themagicwordpodcast.com. And also, I want to thank all of you over the holidays who have been clicking on the banner on our website to take you to Amazon. By doing that, we've gotten a little bit back, not a lot, about $10. You know, I mean, it's just a few pennies per purchase that you guys make, but that's kind of been mounting up and gotten back about $10. So again, it's not a lot, but you know, every little bit helps, and it really does. And I thank you guys all very much for your support and continued support. As you continue to buy on Amazon.com, be sure to use the banner at the bottom of our website, where it will help us through their affiliate program by being an associate of Amazon.com. So thank you guys very much. Well, listen, I've talked long enough, and I want to, again, wish everybody a happy new year, and we'll see you on the other side in 2019. And if you're going to be traveling anywhere or if you're going to be celebrating any place, then please be careful and don't text and drive, and don't be over drinking and driving. Make sure you've got a designated driver, and enjoy your evening at New Year's, and I hope that most all of you are also employed doing a show, and if not, if you're celebrating or maybe helping to support another magician by going and watching his or her show, then that's great then too, and enjoy that. And so until next year, stay well, get booked, and remember the movie Groundhog's Day, and continue to do your best every time. Just when you do these things over and over, always strive to do the best that you can, so that way that you improve. So if you haven't seen Groundhog's Day, go check it out. This is Scotty out. Happy New Year.